To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any agenda deletions, corrections, additions, changes of sequence? Okay. Superintendent's remarks? Okay, we're going to move on to public comments, and we'd like you to know that we appreciate you coming forward. And there's a note on the screen there. We will listen to you carefully, but we're not able to respond. Is there anyone who would like to make a comment? No one. Superintendent report?
Good evening. It's wonderful to have our students and teachers return to work. As cabinet, we were able to visit every site on opening day, and all of the hard work by our classified staff, our certificated staff, in preparing for the first day of school was very evident. There were many comments throughout the day about what a smooth opening it was to the school year. And we want to thank everyone for their efforts to make that happen as we welcome students and families back this fall. This last month, cabinet members and I have been visiting different parent groups. We continue to have amazing support from our parent community and a true partnership with parents in the children's education here in Santa Cruz. Also have enjoyed over the last couple weeks our we've shifted, you all know, our format for our monthly meetings. Mm-hmm. And I've been meeting with two trustees out at each of the different sites, and we'll visit different sites each month. I think it's been a successful start and really wonderful to be able to visit some classrooms together and see the amazing things that are happening and the great work of students. We also had our first community meeting of the school year at De La Viega last week. There was a large turnout. We heard from parents about what they appreciate and what they need. And we were able to answer a lot of questions. I think it's a productive format, and I'm looking forward to our next meeting. I want to commend the Santa Cruz High School Auto Shop. They were recognized again as a clean ocean business by the Department of Public Works. Congratulations, Barry. It's a nice celebration for the work that's happening there. I was also able to attend the Korea Board meeting this week. I was able to share information about the parcel taxes that you have resolved to put on the November ballot. And at that meeting, the Korea Board passed a resolution in support of both measures and OMP. Coming up this next week, there's an event called Celebrating a Year of Compassionate Action. And Mayor Don Lane and the Santa Cruz County Office of Education are sponsoring school visits and a special presentation for the community by comedian Michael Pritchard. And Michael's a comedian, author, and youth counselor. He travels the country speaking to student audience about the importance of kindness and compassion. And I believe Angela has some tickets for you. So I'm going to pass this to her for just a minute.
I do, and I just want to say also for the members of our school community that this is a free event, but we're anticipating it will be a very well-attended, so we're asking that anyone interested sign up online. And I also have tickets tonight, which I'll pass around. We're hoping you all can make it. It's going to be a great evening.
In the evening, we'll also have a performance from Gold's El Sistema musicians at the event, if you're able to make it and hear from them. Board member ID cards. I wore this today just to remind myself that we're asking that all adult staff have ID cards for when they're visiting campuses and they're on campuses. And there's an opportunity for you to get your pictures taken and get your ID cards made so that when you're visiting campuses, you have them. If you get your picture taken at the Soquel High campus, you'll get a card that actually says district office on it. So the other ones will say the high school or the middle school where you have the picture taken. But if you want a district office one, they can set you up at Soquel High. And Nancy sent out a list of times when you could go by and get a photo done. Tomorrow, both Molly and I will be attending the annual Santa Cruz Chamber of Commerce Women's Leadership Forum. And we look forward to opportunities to meet with different leaders in our greater community and build some more relationships in support of our schools. The Santa Cruz Warriors are having a special fundraising event that's going to benefit all of our schools on October 10th. They'll be hosting an event. It's a family event. It's called The Taste of the Warriors. It will feature food and wine tasting, but there's also going to be family entertainment. So it's for kids and adults. And there'll be a raffle and bounce house and all kinds of things. Tickets are available through santacruzbasketball.com. It's going to be at the Kaiser Permanente Arena. The Santa Cruz Education Foundation is also doing two fundraisers for us soon, one for AVID and one for Visual and Performing Arts. The first is on September 26th, the Fashion Arts Santa Cruz, and it will be at 7 p.m. at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium, and tickets are available at Bookshop Santa Cruz. There'll be a fundraiser for the AVID program at Oswald's on October 19th at 5 o'clock, and tickets are available at Brown Paper Tickets. So we continue to have much support from our greater community for all many of the things that are happening on our campuses, and that's all I have for this evening.
Thank you. The next item is student representative reports, and Angela, could you introduce our students?
It is my great pleasure to introduce our student representatives for the year. Erin Pegler is a senior at Harbor High School, and Ellen Carroll is a senior at Santa Cruz High School, and they both have willingly stepped forward to be a part of this process, and we're just delighted to have them here. And they're going to be sharing with us a little bit about who they are and the work that they're doing in school tonight.
Hi there. So as Angela said, I'm a senior at Harbor High. I'm very happy to be here and be nominated by our principal, Mr. Davis. I am happy to be here because I have felt very involved in the process of going through high school and attending meetings and reading board books and trying to change what has been going on so that my future and everyone else around us really has a perspective of someone younger. This year, I'm doing both Harbor and Cabrillo. I think we got that changed just last year. So that's a nice change that just happened. As for Harbor, we're very excited to be starting. We have a lot of new teachers, especially in the math and science building. Everyone is settling in nicely. I'm excited to see how these new teachers contribute to the programs that we've been building, at least the 3 years I've been there so far.
Hi, I'm Ella. I'm a senior at Santa Cruz High, and I'm really excited to be here representing my peers and providing the board with insight to student perspective. And I think I am capable of providing this insight because I am really involved in our community through Student Senate, which offers the students of Santa Cruz High a platform to commentate and come up with constructive comments, shall we say, for issues they find on campus, and I'm really excited to be taking that further with this. I'm also president of our Literary Society and involved in our theater committee. As far as events of Santa Cruz High so far, we've had trifold presentations going over the rules and policies we're expected to adhere to on campus. And there's been a lot of discussion regarding the new security gates, mainly from disgruntled students, but I'll keep my ears open for that. Our fall sports are in full swing. Back to school dance was announced for September 25th. And our fall play has held auditions, put up a cast list, and is in rehearsal. Thank you.
Thank you. Board reports. Stevie?
I first want to thank Aaron and Ella for serving on the board and welcome you both. It's nice to have you. On September 3rd, I had a chance to visit Brent's 40 Small Schools. I met with the two co-principals there. And I just want to give a shout out to Principal Tabashnik, who took me on a tour of the campus and introduced me to the many wonderful alternative education programs that the small schools has to offer. I was quite impressed. On September 8th, together with Superintendent Monroe and Trustee Thompson, I attended the community meeting at De La Vega Elementary. We had a very rich and informative conversation with about 36 parents, I counted them. So it was a really good turnout. And we discussed a lot of different topics, parcel taxes, common core testing, opportunities to enhance elementary school math, which is a keen interest of mine. And they also had a good conversation with us about the facilities needs at the campus at De La Vega. On September 10th, I attended the Santa Cruz County Office of Education Trustee Dinner. The trustees of our local school districts had an engaging conversation with State Superintendent Tom Torkelson, and we shared a lot of our successes, our challenges, and our needs across the districts. And I was quite surprised to hear that we have a lot in common, but we are very unique at Santa Cruz City Schools, and that was also wonderful to realize. Thank you.
Pass. I too had the opportunity to attend the CLE dinner, and it was a wonderful experience, and I thank everyone who was there, and Superintendent Michael Watkins for allowing for it and educating us in the manner. I attended the Soquel High parent athletic meeting to speak to the parents of their students' needs and supports of along athletics and the expectations. I was happy to see it well attended there. I very much enjoyed serving at the welcome back breakfast. It was a very happy day, and the staff was it was a good mood. It was warm, but not too warm at that point, and so off they went. And I've been busy working on a couple tax measures, so that's been keeping me in support with some of the other trustees in the community as we move forward. And as always, you will find me on the fourth Sunday at Santa Cruz High doing parent cleanups on campus, so I'm inviting anybody out there who'd like to come. We just, with the district, pick a project and help with them better.
I wanted to welcome, am I on? Am I? Aaron and Ella. It's going to be great to have you guys on the board. I'm very impressed already with some of the things you've shared about your activism and advocacy at your school, so welcome. I attended the steering committee of the Youth Violence Prevention Strategic Implementation for Live Oak and Santa Cruz. It's really exciting work. Oh, yeah. Want me to say that again?
I'll send you that one.
It's a mouthful. Live Oak, and this is a plan that has been countywide and that's been implemented and endorsed by a number of different boards and groups. And Santa Cruz and Live Oak has decided to sort of create a task force on their own to deal with issues that are particular to the area. So I am very excited to be on the steering committee for it, and I think it's a progressive plan, and it is so well aligned to our district goals for youth advocacy and youth development. So I will be keeping everybody apprised of what's going on. We're going to be having some stakeholder meetings in the next couple of months and some work groups getting off the ground. I also attended the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee meeting last night and visited a number of parent meetings, the PTO meetings at B40, at Harbor, at Monarch, at De La Vega, and at Bayview. They were all very well attended, and it was great to hear about, you know, we have such an engaged group of parent stakeholders, and it was really fun to hear about people being excited and kindergarten parents, and it was great to get swept up in the excitement of the beginning of the year. Thank you.
Thank you all. The president report, I attended the part of the leadership retreat meeting, I guess it was, and just continue to be impressed by the strength of our leadership team and their ability to collaborate. I visited Delta. Delta has gone cell phone free during class time, and I wanted to watch the transfer, how it worked. And they have a cabinet, and they place their cell phones in the cabinet during teachers and students during class time.
The cell hotel,
right. Or those, some of the kids said of the cell gel.
Oh.
But everybody is cooperative. And the teachers report that there are fewer requests for bathroom passes. And that the general climate is just calmer. Okay. And I think it's really interesting. I'll keep watching and let you know how it's going. I toured Harbor High School with Jeremy and Chris. Dick did a great job showing us some of the new, or some of the math and science classes. I particularly enjoyed meeting the new music teacher. Also attend the COE dinner, and Tom Torlakson asked for questions, and he didn't have all the answers, but at least he heard the questions. Mm-hmm. I think that was really good. I want to thank the student trustees for being willing to serve. Your voices are really important, and we really appreciate you taking the time to do this with us. And I want to thank Allison and Patty for their work on the committee for parcel taxes. Our next item is approval of the minutes. We'll start with the minutes of the regular meeting on August 5th. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Patty moves approval. Is there a second?
Second.
And Dee Dee second. Is there any discussion, questions? Okay, I won't ask students because you weren't there. But all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Okay, we have the minutes of the regular meeting on August 11th.
Move approval.
Okay, Allison moves approval. Is there a second?
I actually have a question.
Okay.
Possible correction. There was no adjournment time including?
Oops.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I'll include that before I post them. Can we just agree on that?
Sure.
I'll just check my notes and make sure I get the adjournment time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for letting me know.
Mm-hmm. Second.
Okay, and Patty second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. Aye, abstain.
And okay, we have 4 and 1 abstention. The minutes of the regular meeting on August 12th. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Okay, Allison moves approval. A second?
Second.
Any questions on this one or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained? Okay, 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay, a consent agenda is the next item. Are there any items that members of the board would like pulled for discussion?
I just have a couple quick questions, and they aren't for...
So you don't want to pull, you just want to ask questions?
No, I just want to. Just want to be sure on our Verizon contract that we're not actually entering into the contract. Mr. Monreal, can you help clarify that for me?
Yes, it's being presented as a letter of intent. That would basically work with Verizon on this piece. This will initiate the action. Verizon is also aware that they will then either take this to the county for the hearing based upon that information. So this is just a letter of intent, and then we'll enter this piece to work together on that process.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that it was intent and not an actual contract. And then on the prevention for nonviolence for women contract, I'm just hoping that we'll have, it says that teachers do a review of it, that at some point here in the next year, we'll get a presentation or at least some data on what the teachers are gauging it for and maybe what the students are gauging it for and how it comes through to us.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other trustees have items they'd like pulled? The public, do you have any comments or questions?
Can I ask a question about the emergency all over at the school, at Natural Victory School? What kind of an emergency is it? Emergency repairs?
Fire.
There was a fire in August a recycling container was pushed against one of the classroom buildings.
I remember now. That, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just take a moment to thank you so much for your continued support of that program that you mentioned. And we're in a bit of a transition with our coordinator for the commission right now, so that's why we don't have the presentation that you normally see every year. But I just wanted to give you a little bit of feedback as I move through the community. I can't hardly walk down the street without running into somebody that's taken one of these classes. And usually what I hear from them, I've run into them as adults, that they've really thought a lot about the things that we taught them and used them and feel much safer in their lives for the things that we've taught them in those classes. So I recognize you all, of course, because you've taken classes with me. It's great to see you all grown up and everything. I just wanted to thank you again for your continued support of this program. I think it's really important for our community, and apologize again that we don't have the presentation you normally see. As we move forward with finding a coordinator, we can come back in the middle of the year if that's useful for you, because we do tabulate the data that we receive from teachers and from students. So thank you so much for your support of this program.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah. Robert Chakadong, President of Prospect Union. Two pieces, 8.1.13. Our unit feels that perhaps this position should be classified, and we are looking into that. We haven't left off on that. We feel that people that are not teaching are doing classified work, and it should be a classified position. The next is 8.1.15.87. This is digital schools, a contract that you're going to go into. There is not one administrative assistant in the system at City Schools that has anything good to say about digital schools. It has not been smooth, it's been problematic. I hear nothing but complaints from every one of my members that engages digital schools. So just I want you to be aware of that.
So I want to address the digital schools. I have been sharing with the trustees all of the challenges that digital schools presents. We have to use whatever program the COE is providing. We're continuing to engage with them and provide feedback on what is working and what isn't working. And I've been working with other superintendents, and we're in conversation about the issues surrounding it. It is a beta system, and we aren't getting what we were told we were going to get. So we're working to address that, and we recognize the impact on our staff, and we're not satisfied.
Any other comments from the public or the board? Okay, do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Allison moves approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Patty seconds. This is a roll call vote, and I'll ask for the recommendation from students first. Aaron?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Dee Dee?
Aye.
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 Aye. A report of actions taken in closed session. Patty?
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Assistant Superintendent Molly Parks with direction regarding SCCE negotiations for 2014-15 and 2015-16. The Board of Trustees conferred with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation, and the Board of Trustees conferred regarding property at 313 Swift Street, Santa Cruz.
Thank you. The next item is 8.3.1, staff report on summer school.
So it's my great pleasure again to welcome our Director of Academic Equity and Categorical Programs, Eric Rose, to the podium to bring to us tonight a report for your information about our summer school programs, which are funded through our LCAP with the LCFF supplemental funds and also through Title I. And with that funding, that really gives us the focus on this learning being supplemental. This is targeted learning to support our students who are struggling and who need that additional time, who need a different approach. And I want to just add, before I turn it over to Eric, it was absolutely delightful to watch our three summer school principals in action this summer, and I'm so excited that they're here tonight to share with us both the goals, the outcomes, and hopefully a story or two about how that all came together.
Good evening. I have one quick anecdote. Erin was one of the people who gave input to the LCAP, of which summer school was a part. All coming around closer.
Keep going.
You're good.
Good?
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
So hopefully everyone heard what I just said. Aaron's involved, that's what I said. So, as Angela said, we have three rising stars that I'd like to introduce to you tonight. And Molly, could you go to the next slide? Robert Ellingson is normally our math coach for the elementary district, and he served as the summer school principal for elementary. Lisi Ma is a special ed teacher at Santa Cruz High and was principal of the middle school. And Lisa Storr is our private recovery teacher during the school year and has served in the summer school before, but this is the first time as principal. We also have some migrant programs that I'll talk about later. Alejandro Ruiz is our new migrant preschool teacher, and Patty Switzer provides, thank you, a lot of the services for the migrant program. So, Robert, do you want to sit down? Robert, can you join us tonight?
No, I can
get it.
Hello, I'm Robert Ellingson. I've been in the district for many, many years, and I was pleased to serve as the summer school principal this past summer. Because I was a math coach for the past year, I was asked to write a math curriculum. The math curriculum is right here. And it was half and half, half problem solving based upon Silicon Valley Math Initiative Mars Pass, but also half arithmetic. And the data I'd like to share is the half of the curriculum that was based upon arithmetic. And this was an intervention for students struggling with, and this is common core arithmetic at appropriate grade levels. So I had students incoming into second, third, and fourth. And they were solving mathematical equations, just typical addition, subtraction, multiplication, with pairing, borrowing, with regrouping. It wasn't the basic facts type of intervention. They had 5 minutes every day to solve as many problems as they could. And then that also became, that informed the teacher's instruction. Every week, the problems would change to control that variable that they can just memorize answers. The first graph shows the pretest of fluency. That's nothing more than a raw score of how many problems the student could solve in 5 minutes. The post-test shows significant growth. But what I'm most excited about is the accuracy rate, because that was measuring how many problems a student could do and how many of them were correct. And their accuracy rate in 4 weeks went from 50% to 80% of the math problems a student attempted were correct. And it was all preceded by, this was the math intervention part, using music and movement to increase student focus before they took the 5 minute test. So some people call them hand jives or the cup song, but they actually spent 5 minutes doing a cross lateral movement pattern to music before they moved into the test. And so I did a lot of research on the benefit of that. And I think it shows significant growth. Thank you.
And now we should talk about the middle school experience.
Good evening, board. My name is Rishi Lal, and I had the privilege of working with the middle school as principal. We had a really incredible staff that actually really focused on having the students enjoy being at school, enjoy being a learner, and that was the big motivation. As you see in the 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade, the first two pre- and post-assessments are averages. And then it shows the overall growth. This was primarily because of the teachers' incredible rigor in their assignments. They had collaborative group work, and the students were highly engaged working on creative items in the classroom with each other, dealing with current day math issues, whether it's in real life, percentages and decimals and fractions. These were life practices that they were doing. At the end, it was a culminating project where we actually, as you see right here, we had a walking field trip over to Aldo's where they provided some food for our students, and we did some menu math right there at the Harbor. You can see they're actually highly engaged. It was a wonderful experience, and the students did overall enjoy the program. Thank you.
And Lisa did three separate things this summer, so she's going to talk about two of them now and then come back for the third.
Hi, I'm Lisa Storr. I'm the credit recovery teacher for the Santa Cruz City Schools. And one reason I applied for the principal position is that many seniors end up their senior year not able to pass Algebra 1B. So I thought, oh, this would be good if I'm the summer school principal in the summer school math program that gives them a boost for algebra. The other motivation was that I was a teacher in the credit recovery program next to the math bridge program for 2 years, and I watched them eat candy and drop wrappers in front of my classroom and do a lot of exciting, fun things, but it wasn't focused on math. So I had this vision, what if it was all about math, and what if they got their self-esteem through math activities? So we had this great partnership with the UC Santa Cruz math department and their summer interns, and they brought math games to the program, and they brought these incredible 6 math interns. And when we pre-assessed the students, they all assessed below intro to algebra. They didn't know decimals, fractions, number sense, or percents. So none of them tested into what programs we had ready for them. After 2 weeks with 2 really stellar teachers, a group emerged, and they were advanced with the material we were giving them. 2 of the summer interns stepped up and just presented amazing classes. So I'm really proud of those interns and all that they brought to this program. So the data that you see above the screen is the 4 classes we offered, and it's the growth rates. So we did have 71 students. We decided as a team that we would have 75%. Students had to understand 75% of the material to pass it. So, and they all did, all 71 students. And so this are the number of students in the grade. So we had the highest number of 11th graders. And so they're going to go, they're now seniors. So I probably will be seeing them, helping them to pass Algebra 1B.
So we also had some programs that weren't exactly summer school, but were summer intervention programs. One is the migrant preschool program, and there's 2 parts to that. One is home visits. Home visits means that Alejandro Ruiz, our preschool teacher, goes to the homes of these migrant families and works one-on-one with the student. But while it's meant to help the student, you know, preschoolers, but, you know, the child, while it's meant to help the child, it's also, the main part of it is helping the parents. Because this is only 1 hour a week, and you can't get all that far with 1 hour a week, but if you help the parent become a more effective parent, then you get a whole lot more bang for your buck. We also had a Kinder Academy, which was at the Bayview campus with Robert, and that was to help the kids who are about to enter kindergarten become more prepared. The idea being with other programs to minimize that gap before they even start their first day of school with us. One thing I really like about the microfunding is that there's a lot of flexibility about what kind of programs you can do. So we can do things that are not traditionally associated with schools, including a number of health interventions. A lot of times these are the things that prevent kids from being able to engage with school. If you can't see the board, you're not going to do well with what's written on the board. I want to point out that the out-of-school youth, that's a term that some people might not be familiar with. These are students, well, they're young adults who are ages 18 to their 22nd birthday, and they're not enrolled in school. They're here to work, and the goal for them is not to get a diploma because they're not in school. It's to help them engage in the community more effectively. So we do things like meet their health needs. We teach them some survival English, get them connected to community services and that sort of thing. You heard some about summer school. Part of that was funded through the migrant program. In middle and high school, we provided an aid to help the migrant students. There's also this home-based summer program. For the kids who weren't able to get to summer school, we went to them and provided them with packets to help them catch up in most cases and move ahead in other cases with their academics, even though they couldn't be enrolled in summer school. We took two trips to colleges this summer. One, we brought a busload to CSU of East Bay and had a tour and a talk about how to get to college, what kind of things that you need to do along the way. And we had a middle and high school students, so there's a little bit of everything, people to know where they are in the process and how to move forward. We also sent four students to Fullerton for a week-long program, and they got to live in the dorms and experience a little bit of college life, so that was fun.
So this was a three-week migrant education program, and it was really the most successful one that I observed in that the students all took online Cyber High classes, and they passed a number of them. So it was the first time that every student did online class to success.
And by observe, she means that she ran it. So we can always get better. One thing that we can do better next time is start in the process earlier so that we have more time to prepare and get the right people in the right programs. We had some valuable partnerships with different members of our community. Lisa mentioned one. There were some health teachers in training with Robert at the elementary school, I think around 12 of them. Our partners were very enthusiastic, and I'm sure they'll want to come back, and we also want them back. Something we'd like to do better next time is work with some of our LCAP-funded new positions of the response intervention coordinators at the high school level in order to figure out who the right students are for the right programs, and it'll be that much more effective if we can get that match. So, thank you, and enjoy that.
Looks like we have questions. Dee Dee, would you like to start?
Sure, thank you. I'm going to start with probably the toughest question. You may not have an answer. I really appreciate from all three presenters that you're giving us data about the effectiveness, at least the short-term effectiveness, of your curriculum and your interventions. My question is it possible to get any data or information about the transferability of what they learned in summer school in the subsequent academic year? So is there carryover? Can they take these lessons learned and apply them in the coming academic year and be successful, or more successful than they would have been without the summer school?
So off the top of my head, I would say grades would be one way in the courses, for example. In the courses that are listed here, and then in the courses that are listed here, we could track those students' mm-hmm. grades in those courses. See how they do. Getting more specific might be a little tricky, but probably be done if we tracked what strands of the standards were taught within these programs and see how they did on assessments during the school year. That would be trickier. I have to think more about whether it's feasible. But maybe that's the next step that we could design for next year.
If I can just add to that, I think what we're looking at with our new data system is the opportunity to flag our students that are in interventions and then maintain that flag moving forward and see how they're responding. So so that summer isn't the end of the intervention, we can continue moving forward. And we'll have that capability, but we're still at that foundational level of learning this new system.
Jeremy?
I have two questions. The first is short regarding summer programs. Was credit given? If so, how much?
This slide lists the credits for those classes. This also is for credit. Let's see the classes up here. I guess that's 5 units, Lisa.
Yes, it was for the students that were in the Bridge program. They earned 10, for the students in the Bridge program, they earned 10 credits of elective credits because we didn't want to to put it as math, because we really want to make sure they know math, so that the program is really designed as a boost for their math skills. So it was 10 credits of elective, and they had the longest stay of the students. The other students are online, and so they have to pass exams to earn credits, and I measure them in 5 credit classes that they pass. So we had I'm a writer of those credits, but it's done through a computer program, so it's automatic.
You've segued perfectly into my second question. This is more for I'm thinking out loud, but it's also buried in the union. You talk about cyber classes, and I'm wondering if the union has a position on that, because it's something that we're going to see more of.
We see the cyber classes as a tremendous supplement, and we would hate to see it supplant the classroom instruction that goes on. There are some top subjects that we don't teach. So a student who wanted to study Russian, for example, I don't know if you can do that online, but we don't offer it.
Right now, we're using credit recovery for just credit recovery for courses kids have failed. And it has helped us actually keep kids in the comprehensive high school. So it's helped keep our numbers up in the comprehensive high school. It is in addition to kids' sixth period day. Mm-hmm. So credit recovery happens in the school year in addition to kids' sixth period day. And it allows them to make up the credits and not have to transfer to an alt-ed or COE program to make sure that they make up credits. So right now, Lisa's working after school through the homework clubs to support kids who are in need of credit recovery.
And I'll just add that the minor portion of that, of Cyber High, is a statewide program. And the theory behind that is that migrant students have a particular challenge of moving around, and they don't stay long enough in a program to complete it many times. The Cyber High program travels with them, so they can get credit for doing the work, even if they're at 5 or 6 different high schools. And we do employ a teacher to do this work.
No, that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. Allison. I was excited to see the CalTeach piece there. I think it said CalTeach is a great pipeline into teaching, and we might be recruiting some math teachers. So it would be great to see them enjoy their work here and come back and teach math for us. I had a question about the out-of-school youth, the migrant out-of-school youth. So as I understand it, if a student is identified as a migrant student, they have access, they have a legal right to schooling until their 20...
until their 22nd birthday.
Until their 22nd birthday. And these are students who have not graduated from high school.
Correct, nor are they enrolled.
And they're not enrolled. So are we... I'd like to know about some outreach we're doing to actually get them re-engaged in school, or through GED, or so that they can earn their diploma before their 22nd birthday.
Patty Switzer is one of our marketing staff, and a huge part of her job is going out to the camps, mm-hmm. the labor camps, and meeting with the out-of-school youth and trying to engage them in with whatever they're willing to do. She sits down with them and creates a plan, and the plan varies from person to person. Sometimes it's enrolling in an adult school, mm-hmm. And other times they're simply not interested, and mm-hmm. it's just giving them some health supplies and connecting them with dental services.
So our goal is re-engaging them in school, and then we continue to, did I get that right? So our ultimate goal is re-engaging in school and
yes,
a diploma, and if that doesn't, then we also just support them through other services.
Exactly, we'll do whatever they're willing to do, and but I have to say that the percentage of them that wants to re-enroll in school is pretty low.
Right. And do we have any, are there best practices out there, or programs, I don't know, like in Salinas or Watsonville or some other places where we could find out about how to try to, it's kind of our last chance.
Right. There's a, we belong to a micro region that's mm-hmm. based in the Santa Clara COE, mm-hmm. and they offer trainings. I think for this kind of thing, it's 4 times a year. Mm-hmm. And Patty attends those and learns the best practices from them. And then the region, of course, is connected to the state level and then to the federal level.
Okay, good. Thanks, Eric.
Katie?
Thank you. I have one more question, and it has to do with this transferability issue. How consistent is the curriculum and the pedagogy in these summer-based programs with the curriculum and pedagogy, especially around Common Core and CPM, for example, that's offered during the regular school year?
That's something that we've been working on, and one of our next steps to do better next time. One example of the continuity is Robert, as the math coach, is paying attention to the developments of how teachers engage with Common Core, and then he designed the curriculum for the summer program. So in that sense, there's a pretty direct connection. The online programs, those are pre-prepared programs, so they aren't necessarily connected with what we're doing in the regular school year. However, the people who design these are supposed to be connecting them to Common Core as well.
And then the math Summer Bridge?
The math Summer Bridge, yeah, we...
With the math Summer Bridge, we really looked for a curriculum that we could use that would align with the Common Core, but it was such a short time frame that we looked for a curriculum that we could use for what addressed the assessments. And it's this UCLA curriculum. We used it's old right now, but what we used is now in line with the Common Core, and so we're hoping to be able to use it for next year.
Any other questions? Questions in the public?
I have one question.
Allison.
It's okay. I'll ask it offline.
Casey Carlson speaking as a resource specialist. I was just going to comment, and it's Jeremy's question, that CyberHide has been so useful to our students in special education to help them stay at the high school. And I'll give you two examples. I have a student right now who just had a baby this summer and is missing school. And Lisa was working with her in the spring, and she'll be back with Lisa this fall when she comes back because she wouldn't be able to make up all those credits. And she was urged by some people to go to another school, and she really wants to stay and graduate from SoCal High. And her friend just had surgery also for another health reason, and Lisa's been working with her to be able to keep them through because they really want to stay at the comprehensive high school. In the past, we went and had a choice for them to make up that credit. Other than staying with special ed, they can stay longer. But so I think it really serves a useful purpose that way. And Lisa coordinates really well with the teachers. She's really available. On the topic of intervention, you were talking about the high school students and how they had that small group because they weren't ready for intro to algebra. The special ed teachers desperately are begging the school district to start doing intervention with math students in our high schools. I don't know if it's worse at Soquel because of the feeder school problem, but I know at our transition IEPs, New Brighton is still putting all students below grade level in math in what they call catch-up math, which is a room full of computers and a PE teacher. And it's been that way for a few years. And those kids are not ready for intro to algebra. I mean, luckily, the kids that I work with get to come to my support class, and we work with them, you know, in small groups. But there's plenty of non-special ed kids in there, ELL learners, and just kids who, by this time, they hate math. And I know that George, I remember at the middle school, did those small groups. And I know that we have an RTI coach, but we really need RTI classes for those kids to support them, or they're just never going to make it. Thanks.
Barbara Pointer, senior custodian at small schools. I'm also classified treasurer and negotiating team. What I wanted to speak about is just, I love what Lisa does. She was at my site for the migrant cyber buy and stuff, and I love it. But I want to speak on behalf of the workload when there is a program at my site. It's me and not even a half a body that is at my site to clean. So not only am I doing summer cleaning, I'm cleaning up again after these folks. And like I said, hats off to them. but it's a lot more work on me and my 3.5-hour individual. So I just want you to be mindful of that. Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions?
I just want to send another thank you to our teacher leaders who stepped up and took on the role of really grateful to you for the work that you did on behalf of our students this summer.
Okay. Our next item, 8.3.2, opening enrollments.
Thank you. Chairperson Vestal, bringing forward tonight again this preliminary report of enrollment for Santa Cruz City Schools that's being presented as part of the board book and as part of our cover sheet that we presented for the program tonight. You can see that just in this continued path, we are decreasing in enrollment across the board throughout the district. Presented tonight as far as the numbers presented that we do, we're about 144 students below our projection from last year. 43 at elementary school, we are below, we're actually over 11 students at middle schools, 58 under at the high schools, and right now currently 54 under at the small schools. So it's about 144 students under our projected piece. It'll have a significant or potential impact, especially on our LCFF funding for the 16-17 year, 15-16, where that's a safe net of the higher of the previous or your current year. And we're actually currently 220 below our 2014 CBEDs. The first Wednesday in October is the official cap date, as students still continue to enroll at that time. So again, presenting the information tonight for information to the board.
Are there any questions? Allison?
I've been hearing from students and parents actually at the high school level about very overcrowded classes, not having rooms, desks to sit in, or enough. Are our classes and our courses impacted?
I can speak to that. Earlier at Soquel High, we did hear from administration. We looked at their master's schedule, and we allotted additional FTE there because their enrollment jumped over projection. We also worked with administrators at the other two high schools to look at balance. I think in some cases it's difficult when there's a singleton to balance. So if you have only one section of a class and you don't have quite enough to break it into two. Mm-hmm. So we're aware of a few of those situations. Mm-hmm. And our teachers are compensated for every student over. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think maybe we should check back in about those individual situations and see if there's any additional support we can provide them.
I assumed that it was something about smoothing out, and maybe it had something to do with leveling classes and having a challenge to level classes. Sounds like that's what.
And that's my understanding. It's mostly with our singleton classes, mm-hmm. and there were occasions where we could open an additional section, and then
there are just
occasions
one.
Where it's just situations where it's just not enough students to merit an entire second section.
Hey, Jeremy.
Jim, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but in general, will our count, do you think our count is going to go up or down between the September 2nd count reflected here and the October CVEDs?
I'll defer to Chris. I know it's part of the history for the district. Normally, from the start of school up until the last couple weeks of September, we may see some growth. But I believe based upon just the nature of where we are and the impact of housing and family pieces of it, we continue to see declines in our overall enrollment.
And that leads me to my second question. Do you think that what we're seeing is the beginning of the effects of gentrification in terms of housing on the elementary schools?
I believe so. It's a very... it's been a very consistent topic at the Chamber of Commerce since I've arrived here, noting the housing shortage and the housing affordability for families. And that's one reason why we're incorporating that in some of our initial discussion with our long-range facility master plan as part of the whole piece. But yeah, I would definitely say that has, in our case, a negative effect to our enrollment.
Okay.
And then finally, and forgive the third question, are we looking at developing a long-range demographic schedule?
That's what it is. That's one of the things we're going to get into. I know Superintendent Moreau and I have been talking about, you know, why are some of these students or families leaving? What's the decrease to? And I think it is time for us really to take that next step to see exactly a true expert-led demography study to see exactly what the effect has been on the district. Absolutely.
Outstanding. Thank you.
I just want to add history. We don't typically see a very much change from start of school to October. See a little bit, but not very much historically. The numbers that we saw this year, we're digging into at the secondary to find out, you know, where kids are going, what's happening. And I met with the Harbor High team this morning to look at, they called all the students who didn't show. They've been looking to track, and we're working to put together some information, and we'll get it to you when we figured out exactly how many people moved out of the area, how many people moved to other schools, and I'll provide that information in a written report to the board at some point in the next month.
Hey, Patty.
So one of my questions was answered. We will be looking to have a demography study because I think this is a little bit deeper and we'll need to plan for it. And then I'm just curious as to Soquel High has this anomaly of a freshman class, and I'm wondering, are they all in district students, or are we having a matriculation out of maybe our neighbor district because it's Soquel is so far and Aptos students coming over for reasons? Can we look into that? I mean, that's 100 more than, it's at 345 and 341 and 231 in the freshman class on one of our other sites. We share students that way. Mm-hmm. So that might be, you know, what is attractive and what can be attractive to both for a balance for scheduling of schools if they're coming from Shoreline or New Brighton and how they make their choices. And then are they coming from Aptos?
I will get the inter-district transfer information in that report when I get it to you. Both the transfer, the kids that aren't there and the kids that are there and where they're coming from and where they're going to.
And what's drawing them so that we can draw, so we can start seeing at all three of our comprehensive high schools what a draw is for anybody that may be in our demographics that has opted to choose a different path.
It would be tough for us to assess what the draw is. When I can query the IDT numbers, but I couldn't tell you what's random.
Any other questions or comments? Public questions, comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next item, 8.3.3, new teacher report.
Good evening. This is always a fun one to bring to you because it's the kind of the happy new year for HR. So we welcomed quite a few new staff to Santa Cruz City Schools, our certificated staff who started here late August. We had 54 new hires, 32 of them are full-time, 22 are part-time. New to education, there were 29. 1 to 5 years of experience, there were 8. And very surprisingly, there were 17 that had more than 5 years of experience that joined us. So you can see it's a real variety of folks that we brought into the district this year. At elementary, it's just going on its own. Let's see.
We can read really fast.
There we go. Oh, perfect. So, breakdown, we had 14 at elementary. That does include counselors as well, and some of our in special ed. Middle school, 12. High school, 25. Alternative education, we brought on 3 new staff members. This breaks it down by subject area. There's been a lot of talk about Harbor High. New staff, new math, new science, there they are. We're excited. A lot of these folks did come out of our UCSC program as well as others that decided that Santa Cruz would be a great place. And a new music teacher, someone mentioned that on our east side, kind of building a wonderful program there, continuing the work that's been done. On the 20, we had our teacher, new teacher orientation. It was a great day. They got to meet each other, and they learned about the goals and vision of our district. They did a scavenger hunt through the district office, which was really fun. Instead of having folks come and meet them, they went out and met everyone and got to know where to go when we need support. They learned about our union membership. Barry and Casey and folks came and joined us. Those that are new to teachers learned about the new teacher support program that we offer. And then the afternoon, a change we made was the afternoon was their site time instead of the following day. Because of the additional PD day we had, this seemed to be a way to make it work for everyone. Here's just some cute pictures of our new teacher orientation day. You can see them traveling around there. The bottom left is our new Costa Nova team coming in there. There they are. Here are some of our teachers, not all of them. This was just some of my tours out and about in the first week or so of school. Some of our new teachers that joined us. See those math teachers. Fun times there at Westlake with a new teacher in our SDC classroom. So we really are proud and really grateful and excited about some of the new folks that have come in, and really grateful for the experienced folks that we have that are going to help them to make this transition to either a new school or to a new career. I want to see if I can get this to work. It was a little cheer from Harbor High, so apologize. I thought it was going to work. They did a little school spirit activity at the end of the day that rooted on their own school, and that one was a good. They spelled out Harbor, and then of course made a rrr at the end. So, any questions?
Hey, Dee.
I want to say kudos to you, Molly, to you and your team for finding all these wonderful new teachers. My question is around the teachers that are new to education. How many of those folks are math and science teachers?
I don't have the exact number. I can give it to you, Dee, but quite a few, especially within the math and the science. We're definitely new. I think more of our experience came actually in special ed, which was unusual, but quite a few of them are new.
So can I ask a follow-up to that?
Sure.
What kind of support are they going to be offered to engage with the curriculum, particularly math, and really get up to speed, given that many of them may have been hired at the very last minute?
Well, we offer new teacher support to all of our students. And so as a district, we've been committed to paying for that for our teachers. And we work with the New Teacher Project, and they have a mentor that comes in and works with them, and as well as planning and observing and really that hands-on kind of piece, and then also helping them to clear their credentials. So that's one piece. We also have our RTI coaches that have been working, and they're all focused on math in the secondary, so they're also a huge resource to our teachers.
And I can just add that at Harbor, where they've been implementing CP, and they anticipated this need, and they offered, to the teachers they had hired early on, they offered a four-day institute in August. And I believe they're offering ongoing professional learning because CPM is more than just a math curriculum. It's a way of instructing that's very different from many of our teachers. Additionally, I want to say that as we are able to recruit student teachers who are already have been placed in our schools as part of their internship or as part of their program, we'll be able to see that transference of having been mentored within the curriculum and then being able to take it on in your own classroom.
Hey, Jeremy.
Two quick questions. Of the 54 new hires, how many were temporary and how many are probationary?
She gave you that.
I missed it.
Actually, I didn't give you temporary.
Again.
Didn't quite give temp or probe, but again, I can give that to you. It depends on how many were on leave. I would guess to venture that most of those elementary folks are on a temp contract. We did, so broadly, we've got to fill it with a temp. So I can give you the breakdown of that, but I don't
I'd like to
right
see
now.
Those numbers.
Sure.
A more general question. In terms of a timeline for next year, were you pleased that Santa Cruz City School was operating at speed, so to speak, compared to other districts so that we could recruit the best and the brightest? And do you think there's any room for improvement? Would you be willing to comment on that?
Always room for improvement, absolutely.
Well,
so we all know that we're there. A major teacher shortage, and you see it in the press all the time. There were districts that started out with 70, 80 teachers short, and they were all started with substitutes. That was not our case. We are looking at a more aggressive recruiting process. We started this year, and I think it did help. This current year, we'll be looking even further. Southern California is reporting to have more teachers being produced than Northern California, so we're looking at if there's a trend down there. Is it worth kind of looking to see if some folks are willing? We did hire some teachers from San Diego this year that have joined us, and so looking at where those pockets of people may be. Of course, we're not the only ones doing that, and so we will be reaching out more, going to more recruiting fairs, and being ready to offer contracts and on the spot so that we have the people that we want to serve our students. Because we know the earlier we can get them. The other major piece that we have, and we have done it this year, again, can do more, is working with our universities in our areas. Had a lot of luck with CSU and me and their special ed department, and bringing people from there, which has been excellent. And as well as the CalTeach program and the UCSC program.
Sorry.
We know what Casey was like as a student. She did it. I just wanted to thank you guys for working so hard to bring in our new teachers and to provide orientation. It's I know it's a lot of hours to do it well, and I was very pleased to hear about it, so thank you. I did want to also comment on our induction program and the importance of our induction program and how providing high-quality induction and paying for it is going to be a recruitment tool, because there are districts all over that are not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. I've heard from teachers in neighboring districts where they showed up to the beginning of school only to find out that they were no longer working with the new teacher project, and it was enough to make them consider leaving the district. So I think that piece is so important. I'm glad we value it, and I think it's important to, you know, sort of see that in the big picture of recruitment. Thanks.
We do use that in recruitment a lot, and let people know that that is something that we offer, because it's true. Not all districts, in fact, less and less and less are doing it. And I do need to say that a huge thank you to the HR team. Desiree Dominguez is amazing, and the rest of the team for getting all these people hired. It was a crazy summer, but I feel very successful.
Okay. Comments, questions for the public?
Well, I want to first thank HR for inviting us to the new teacher orientation and giving us a chance to meet the new folks. Do we have an idea of why we needed to hire 54 new people? So I'm wondering, I remember we had a handful of retirees, and I don't know the number, something along the lines of, I don't know if it was as many as a dozen.
It was more.
Okay.
Yeah, more. A lot of people moved out of the area.
So then we had some resignations.
Mm-hmm. Poses.
Excuse me?
Teachers on special assignment.
Oh, well, that's, so I was going to get to that. So we had some retirements and some resignations. And then we had some new positions created for teachers to be released from their classrooms to provide support. Mm-hmm. And do we have an idea of, you know, how much growth like that? How many of these 55 people, or how many of the FTE are FTE beyond what we offered last year?
Beyond the classroom, you mean?
Well, you know, we have 55 new people coming, but you know, some of them are part time. We had, you know, some retirements, some resignations,
and some partial leaves. I mean, that works for the part.
So, I mean, would it be possible to get an idea of, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, maybe tonight's not the time, mm-hmm. probably not, but just have we grown in FTE, or has there been a reduction in overall? Once all this shuffling is done, so that's a question maybe that could be answered in the future.
It's on our staffing sheet, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but I don't think there wasn't a whole lot of addition on our staffing from 1 year to the next. Do you remember exactly what it was, Angela? On the because we showed on our staffing sheet whether there was an increase or decrease at each of the grade levels. I know we had an increase at Circle High. We had an increase at B40. They're small. Based on enrollment, and I think we had a decrease at different places, so it wasn't significant, but we can show it to you.
And then besides the staffing for classrooms, there must have been some hiring to take the place of folks who were provided with positions out of the classroom, so they would count as growth.
So those would be temporary positions, right. Yes, that. That would be growth. So there were five teachers released.
Five secondary, and then I believe four additional TOSAs, so Next Generation Science, ELD coach.
But not all full time.
Yes.
Those are
so there were nine.
Nine FTE
added by releasing folks from. Oh, that's significant, mm-hmm. right there. So some of these 54 people are replacing folks that are still with us.
Yes.
My other...
Temporarily.
Yeah, but temporarily, or if we maintain these positions, then you know, that would be great. The second comment is that it's got to be expensive to be replacing folks who choose to go elsewhere. And I'm wondering if it might be time for us to consider not just looking at making sure our induction program is top-notch, and that's important, but maybe bringing back peer assistance and review so we could provide support to folks who are veteran but struggling, or folks who are making changes in their assignment that need support.
I agree. Retaining teachers in our schools is critical, and talking about culture and climate in our schools is really the number one way of why people stay, and I think supporting our colleagues is important. And yeah, I think we need to continue to work on the retaining piece of it, for sure. And part was effective, I know, when we had it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Barbara Pointer, you guys know me. I just want to say hats off to HR and the entire team. I have never seen Costa Nova so engaged during class. There is no wandering anymore. It's amazing. I mean, you walk by and those kids are learning. So thank you.
Uh,
Jeff Hodgson, community supporter. Instead of nitpicking and finding little tiny things to quibble about, I'd just like to offer my special commendation for a job very well done, and understanding what an extremely difficult job it is to recruit people to Santa Cruz. You've done a terrific job. Thank you, Dr. Bartz.
Patty?
Just a quick comment. I noticed in the slide Mr. Prather at Harbor High School. I'm really happy to see that we have a on-coach campus for the students. I think it does wonders for morale and behavior, and hoping that as we hire and principals and different sites see it, the children in high school, sorry. The students are engaged, and I just think it brings a different level to the campus, and I'm happy to see it. So kudos. Thank you.
I wanted to comment, not necessarily about PAR, although I am very supportive of PAR, but maybe a consideration to do an exit survey when folks leave, so that we can gather data on why people are leaving and we can look at it. And that retention piece is important, but we really don't know why they're leaving unless we explore it and ask them.
And we actually did do that this year. Yeah, we didn't get to all of them, but we got to quite a few of them of why they were leaving. And that's why I said most of them were moving out of the area. Mm-hmm. There were some that took jobs at a nearby district because their money was better, so they're commuting. But cost of living, housing, was the main reason.
Thank you, Molly. Okay, our state testing update is next.
Thank you. I'm Jennifer Wildman, a director of curriculum and assessment up. This is the first year that we had reportable scores, and Jennifer has been a tremendous asset helping those of us at the central office understand these scores, make sense of them. And this will be ongoing work for us as we look at the scores as really our foundation, as our base or our starting point. So I want to thank Jennifer for all of her work, not only with coordinating the testing, but also with this first time through helping us understand what these scores mean.
I need to grab the cookie. Please, yes. That's okay. Hello, everybody. So I'm bringing you the riveting test scores from this past year's STAR program, which is now called CASP, the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress. And it has been a really interesting job to both help administer these tests and then to get the first set of scores back and to try to figure out what they mean for all of us. And I'm not done doing that. So I picked a very interesting time in my career to be a curriculum director because pretty much everything has changed from what I used to know. So I'm still also learning. So you may have questions for me I don't yet know the answer to, but we'll see. So we did get our first round. We gave our first round of the new tests this year. We call them Smarter Balanced tests because they come from the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. Other tests that still exist are the CSD Science for 5th and 8th grade and 10th grade, and also the EAP, which I'll talk about in a minute. There's also a new alternative performance assessment for our special ed students that's been created that we're just now starting to use. Because many of these tests are new, the results are also considered new, and it's really tempting for all of us to peek back at our CST scores to see what happened and then peek forward, but we have to keep telling ourselves not to do that because the tests are based on new standards and new curriculum and new ways of instructing. There's a lot going on, and I think that we have to caution ourselves not to make the mistake of trying to compare. I did it already. But it's it's really important that we let our families know that this is a whole new day. These are baseline scores These are scores we're going to use in the future, not right now. So we're getting the big picture now as a baseline, and we're going to be moving forward as we go to adjust what we do in our programs and in our classrooms to meet the needs of our students as we move into a new era of curriculum and assessments and standards. One of the things you might notice, is that the Casey's been in the news a lot lately. The state decided not to administer the June Casey. So students that had taken the Casey and not passed it could not take it again this summer. And for a very small number of our seniors, that meant that they had completed their graduation requirements, didn't pass the Casey, could have taken it in June and passed and graduated, and it left a lot of those students in limbo. And that actually did include some students in the state who had college entrance problems because they didn't technically graduate from high school. So the governor did sign emergency legislation a few weeks ago, allowing seniors in this situation of having met all their graduation requirements but not having passed the Casey to go ahead and graduate. And so our schools are informing those very few students that they did indeed graduate from high school. There is no November administration of the Casey planned, so if a student has not yet taken it, they won't be taking it this November. And if they've taken it and not passed it, they also won't be taking it. And the legislators are now in the works of possibly suspending the Casey forever, and we don't know the answer to that question yet. These are our baseline test scores. They're just the overall average at each school of students who met or exceeded the standards. Our old test had 5 levels. The new test has only 4. So it's not met, you know, nearly met, met, or exceeded. And these are students who met or exceeded the standards at each grade span. The good news, the really good news, and something you should be very proud of, is that we are pulling up the scores of the county, the average score. So our scores are higher than the scores in the county overall, actually in every case. And we are also higher than the state average in our results. So we should be really proud of that, especially with the new test and new curriculum and so many new things happening that, you know, we knew all along our teachers and students were doing a great job, and we do have the confirmation of that. But like Molly said earlier, we always have room to improve. So when I look at these, I think about what we're going to be doing with these scores in informing our programs and our teachers and our principals and how we move forward. One of the pieces of information we have to help inform us about that, we used to call the smaller pieces of the STAR test subtests. The new term you're going to hear is claims. Those claims have a big long sentence behind them, like students will be able to read, blah, 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 blah. But the basic topic of each of those claims is listed on the left-hand column up there. So there are 4 claims in English language arts. There are reading, writing, listening, and research and inquiry questions that make up those claims. So the overall test, you may have met your standards, but it's possible that a student would not have met each and every claim under that standard. So, and also our schools as well, although we have an overall score of a certain percentage of students who met or exceeded the standard, as you look across the grade levels in the claims in ELA and math, you'll notice that there are varying levels of success with those claims. We're just now learning how to use them. It's a little hard because you can't quite take an average when you look across, but if you look at math, for instance, concepts and procedures, when I look at that and look across the grade levels, I notice a couple of dips. Could be for a lot of reasons. And remember that these are cumulative, so that everything that happened before a student's fifth grade year is being tested at that fifth grade juncture. We also did notice, by the way, that as a state, the fifth grade scores did all dip there, so there could be something with the test. But when I look across, I think, what is there about concepts and procedures that maybe we could look at in our programs and supporting our teachers and understanding better and our students and learning more about that? Just an example of something we might do with these. I know you probably have a ton of questions. These are a lot of numbers. So just as an overview today, that's the kind of thing we're looking at and just trying to see, are there trends? Do we see things across the county and state that are similar? Are there districts that are like ours that scored similarly or better or worse, or, you know, what does it look like in other places? That's the kind of work we're doing right now with these. Our next steps, I have such good news for you. You asked a lot of questions earlier, and I was over there thinking in my head how much I wanted to tell you about the other things that are happening. In relation to these test scores, you know we have a relative need to focus on math. That's been really clear. And I'm really happy to say that in our secondary schools right now, we have RTI coordinators that were hired this year, most of whom are focusing on math, and particularly on our early math programs, algebra and an intro to algebra, and focusing on the students there and the teachers and in making them more successful. So when you say, will we have interventions in secondary for math, I can assure you that yes, we will, and also that there'll be a system of supports for those teachers who are teaching our students who need to get through algebra and need to be able to pass that course to move on to our more advanced math classes. That's a whole other presentation, but I'm really excited to tell you that there's a lot in the works for that. And some of that is based on knowing our data in the test course. The second thing we're working on is our assessment system. I read a really good analogy, which is if you can imagine our school system being like a house that we're remodeling, and we're always in the process of remodeling, our assessments are something that need a great deal of remodeling. You might think of them as the kitchen at this point, so it's very hard to remodel your kitchen. Assessments are something we use all the time, and right now they're in flux, and they're changing, and it's hard to cook in your kitchen when you're remodeling. So there's a lot of stress about assessments, and they are changing in many ways that are not in our control and in some ways that are in our control. So we're trying to shape our assessment system based on the state assessment system, incorporating all those great things that we already do. So there's a lot of work happening in assessments that you'll be hearing about. Also, providing training to our teachers, our new teachers and our old teachers, and the in-between teachers, and our RTI coordinators to use it our new data system. Our first training is tomorrow. We've already snuck in there and used it a little bit to get some of our scores. It's kind of an amazing system. I'm really excited about the potential for that system to influence how we use our data, how we get our data, and who can get it. And we're hoping that will be everybody everywhere. And that data system and all of our assessments will obviously have an impact on our standards-based instruction and those strategies that we use in our classroom. And that is where I wanted to jump in again and answer a previous question. Those coaches that are out of the classroom, you heard about 9 people. So some of those are RTI coordinators at our secondary schools. But there's also a group of coaches who are working in different content areas to support our teachers across TK all the way up to 12th grade. Those areas are science, technology, ELD, and we also have a special ed coach working with general and special ed interventions and our teachers in their IEP goals. So there's a lot of really exciting things happening. My office went from being a very small room to a very big room full of people, and I love it. And it's this group of people is going to make a big impact, I think, on our teachers and our students and the way that things are in the future. So that is all I have for you right now. Are there any questions?
Allison.
Thank you, Jennifer. I was really happy to see, I was kind of bracing myself. I think everybody in California was. And I was really excited to see our baseline data.
Yes.
I mean, it was a confirmation of the great work that you folks are doing. So awesome. I had a question about the data, the slide before. So this is 3 of 4 quadrants. Is that right? Because it's saying that it's the percent near, at, or above.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
Is that?
Yes. So this is the hardest thing to explain, but I think I finally figured it out. Let me see if I can do it really briefly. The test has 4 levels of achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Not met, nearly met, met, and exceeded. So the overall score, because there are so many questions, statistically we can say this many students didn't meet, this many students nearly did, this many students did, and this many students went advanced, right, exceeded. But when you get down to the claims level, there are many, many fewer questions. And so I think the reason that they squished the nearly met and exceeded together is because they actually represent a very small band in the overall achievement of students from kindergarten through 12th grade. When you look at the student and teacher reports the parent reports that are about to be sent home, you're going to notice the achievement band is long, and then nearly met is a teeny little section, and met is a teeny little section. And that makes sense when you think about kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade. So I think that's why they put those items together. Met and nearly met are together on the claims.
Okay. So it doesn't correspond at all to the far below?
No.
Like the stop?
No, that's just out. Okay. Yes. good question.
Thank you.
Indeedy.
You didn't anticipate a lot of my questions, so thank you. I did have one question about the data system and how user-friendly it's going to be, particularly for teachers and for principals, when teachers are trying to really pinpoint where the problematic areas for their students, and then for principals when they're putting together their site plans.
I am very excited about this system in that it's really intuitive, and an example of that would be today we met with the elementary RTI coordinators. We were talking about how ELD groups levels were determined, and they said, we can't get our self data anywhere, and I said, oh, look, and clicked, and in about 5 minutes, we had all the kids grouped into levels. And that was new, none of us knowing how to do it. So it's really intuitive. There are a lot of keywords you can type in. All I typed in was CELT, and it popped up 10 reports for the CELT, so we just clicked until we found the right one. We're having our first training in that data system tomorrow. We've chosen to do the same training twice for planning purposes, so no one in the district has training on eliminating right this second. By tomorrow, our RTI coordinators, coaches, and assistant principals will be done with a day of district rollout training, so they're going to learn how to use the system and also plan how to get that information to principals and teachers. And then on October 2nd, the principals will come, hear what those people learned and what they recommend for our plan for rollout, and then determine the actual rollout to teachers. So I think it has a lot of potential. It's much more user-friendly than our old system. It's a much simpler interface, and I'm hoping that everybody owns it, and I'm going to make sure that that happens.
Thank you. Jeremy?
To what do you ascribe the 26% point differential between math competency and English competency at the 11th grade level? That's stunning to me.
You know, if this is the first district I've worked in where math scores are lower than English scores, so I've been spending a great deal of time analyzing where the issues are for that. One is that I think we don't have as many English learners as some of our surrounding districts, so they don't get impacted in their English classes as much here by English learners that are in the grouping. But I actually think that our math programs have not changed as quickly as our English language arts programs, and that the standards are pretty tough. The new standards are hard. We don't have our new programs implemented yet, so teachers are still trying to work with the old textbooks and implement the new standards. We're looking at an adoption this year of math programs. So I think it's a combination of things. And we're still looking into what the cause of that is. I know there's a grant that's being written by the S4C people to look at math across the county. I would say that overall, I have the scores from the county and from the state. The county and the state overall percentage of students who are proficient or above or met or exceeded the standard is only 44%. So I think that overall that trend exists everywhere, and we're trying to find out what the cause is, and that grant is part of what we're going to do to do that.
Okay, any other questions? Questions or comments from the public? Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, we have a staff report on the local control and accountability plan, strategic initiatives, and instructional focus.
I think this gets the prize for the longest title.
I think so.
So it's my pleasure to share with you, to preview with you our focus for the year, and to say that it's been a bit of a challenge to define that focus, given that we had some unexpected resources that came to us in late May and early June in the form of additional funding for our supplemental. So it's been exciting times of, as you heard earlier, hiring some TOSINs and some coordinators, and then right now is the time to really focus that work in, and also to partner the work that we're doing this year with the good work that was being done at our school sites and at our grade levels the previous year. In Ed Services, we really take the engaging students' hearts and minds, every student, every day, to heart. And it's such a great opportunity to see this play out in a department, in a division where we have dedicated directors focused not only on academic programs, but directors who are focused on social emotional health, on our special education students, on our students who are in school, students who are not in school, and our students who are learning English. We look at those first three goals that we've had in our district for some time now, and think about how the first one in particular is how do we engage our students' minds in a way that they will have the opportunities they need post-secondary for college or career. And right along with that is looking at the importance of creating a culture and a climate so they feel supported within school, connected within school, with their teachers, with each other, with the content, so that they leave school not only with the skills they need to access college and career, but a lifelong love of learning and a lifelong sense of community that they've received. And then lastly, and very importantly, is our work to eliminate the achievement gap. And that really goes back to the every student, every day. And it is a call to arms around, do we truly monitor the work of every student every day? Do we truly monitor how our students are doing in class? If they're in school, if they aren't in school, where are they? So we take that last goal number three very, very seriously, and it really is the heart of all of our work. Our collective mission, again, is to ensure that students have that access to college and career, to focus on closing the achievement gap, and really to rally around the idea that equity is not just equal, but that everyone has the access to those opportunities they need for their essential needs, their well-being, and to achieve their full potential. And as Jennifer mentioned earlier, this is part of our data system work. This is not just looking out over a room full of students and kind of making an observation that they seem to be doing okay, but diving in deeper, looking at our data in an ongoing way, asking important questions and asking difficult questions about who is thriving in our system and who needs additional support. The strategies that we have continue to focus on teaching and learning through that engagement. We continue to build out our response to intervention, our response to instruction and intervention. And that, again, means looking at what is our base program. When I say base program, it's what is the program that we are putting in place that we are hoping will support 85% or more of our students. That through this program, through the services, through the staff, that we expect that most of our students will be successful. And then when our students aren't successful within that base program, what are the interventions that we can use to target those areas of challenge for them? Within teaching and learning, so this is much of the work that Jennifer has been talking about. And PowerPoint just did something very interesting. So we've had professional learning communities, I want to say, for 6 years now. And that has been a wonderful structure that engages teachers in collaboration with each other, looking at student data. And what we're looking at this year is not just the data that comes in the form of pre- and post-assessments, but the ongoing or formative assessments, the information that our teachers get during the day in class that allows them to make decisions about how they will revise their curriculum or their approach with their students. We're also engaging in promoting academic conversations within the classroom and getting some support from a consultant around that, acknowledging that when we don't hear student voices in the classroom, it may be that students need instruction on how they participate. We have students who have high levels of understanding who are not fully engaged in that classroom work, and so supporting them through academic conversation and really teaching them those structures. The implementation of Common Core State Standards is huge. We're really grateful to have the support of teachers on special assignment. I'm so proud to be a part of a district that has honored teacher leadership for some time in the form of our skill team. And it's been truly exciting to recognize teacher leadership in the form of these new teacher coaches. They are learning their role through Jennifer, and part of that is understanding the content, and the larger part of that is how to work with their fellow teachers, how to offer coaching in a way that's building relationships, that's seen as supportive, and also helping teachers take that next step. And as we all know, that can be a very complex process because we are often, as teachers, in the role of knowing, and when we're learning, it's a very different role. So our teacher coaches are working on building relationship right now as they are getting out into the schools. We're also developing our teacher leadership through the training and data collection, and this is an area where we're all learning together. We are coming out of an era where data was used to label or penalize, and we're moving into an era where data is used in an ongoing way. Data allows us to, again, ask those important and difficult questions about who is thriving in our system and who needs additional support. Tomorrow we have our first training of the core team with Illuminate, and we're rolling this out in, I think, a very thoughtful way. We're first gathering everyone in the room who will have questions asked of them later. So we're walking through that process first with that core team and then bringing the implementation, the next step, to our principals and then bringing it out to our teachers. We know that anytime we bring something new to teachers, there's a question of how this will fit within their day. So our goal is really to make this very user-friendly from the onset, so that, as Jennifer mentioned, we are able to invite teachers to really take ownership of this so that the data becomes their data. And lastly, we're continuing our efforts to look at the evaluation and the coaching processes, knowing that teacher effectiveness is dependent upon those processes being respectful, building relationship, offering support, and knowing that that is how we're going to grow our teachers with all of this new learning. Within our elementary grade span, we have some, I'm just going to throw them all up there. We have some ongoing structures within our tier one. So our walk to be is really both a tier one and a tier two. Within the tier one, we're providing instruction for all students at their level. And within tier two, we're looking at those students who need additional support or smaller groups, more targeted instruction. Our full-time counselors are really on the other end of the social-emotional health. They're helping to support the BASE program, which we see through our second step curriculum, which we see through many of our PBIS strategies. And now that we have full-time counselors, they're better able to provide the targeted support through groups, through lunch bunches, through one-to-one meetings with students. So again, the counselors are providing both that tier one and that tier two support. And I point out also up there, we are so excited to have a dedicated English learner resource teacher at the elementary. For the past few years, we've had one ELD resource teacher to serve K-12. And I think that person has just been kind of scrambling to get to all of the new teachers and didn't have as much time to really support the teachers with their classroom instruction. With this dedicated teacher at both the elementary and at the secondary level, they're able to hone in on and really truly provide the classroom support that we think will show results. And then finally, I'm really excited that through the leadership of our director, Stacey O'Farrell, we've had 2 days of training with our special ed and our general ed teachers around Common Core for special ed students. And what's exciting about this is it really goes back to our district mission of closing the achievement gap, recognizing that students who have some learning challenges can and in fact will do well with Common Core through this kind of support. We've had 2 days of that training and we'll have another 2 days in November. And Stacy and her team are working with the special ed staff who I think have been left out of some of the Common Core training in the past. So we're excited to have this available for them as well. In secondary, you hear a lot about our response to intervention coordinators, and we are hoping to bring them to a board meeting. We want to give them a little more time to learn their job and to be comfortable in that position. We're also excited to have the Scholastic Math Inventory. So you've heard me talk about the Scholastic Reading Inventory. The Math Inventory will provide the same type of universal assessment. So moving away from using grades as our data to using assessment tools that give us the kind of data that we can use to provide interventions. We are increasing literacy support ongoingly through READ 180, and then we've added two sections of System 44 at the middle school, again with the idea that if we can provide some early on support for students struggling with reading, we can help exit them from that program and get them back to the grade level sections that they should be in. You heard last year from our parents in our community about the Newcomer Academy. We have that up at Harbor and Newcomer sections at Mission Hill and at Branson 40. And they're building a team at Harbor. It's an interdisciplinary team of teachers, and with the support from counselors and administration, we're excited to see that this is a group of students that won't get left behind. They will be brought along. Again, we are offering the social and emotional health survey for all of our 7th through 9th graders. Last year, we gave that survey and we analyzed the results at one of our schools, and that's pretty much where we stopped. This is the year for us to take those results and put programs in place and then evaluate those programs, the program effectiveness. We've been able to offer some trauma-informed school training at B40 Middle and also at small schools, and then ongoing training in culturally responsive practices with two consultants, with Enid Lee and with Eddie Fergus. Eddie, you know from previous board presentations, worked with us around the analysis of data. Enid is coming in with a very sharp focus around classroom practice, and she's meeting with our high school teams next week, and we'll start doing some classroom observations with them. For those of you who know her work, she is very focused on what are the barriers within the classroom that get in the way of students feeling comfortable, students being successful. So with our goal of creating a college-going culture, we have a few changes this year. We have taken all of our fourth graders for the past, I want to say 4 years, Chris, to Cabrillo with all of the other fourth graders in the county. And that has been both exciting and a bit challenging. So this year, rather than bring all of our students out to Cabrillo, Cabrillo is hosting an open house for students and their parents. And so we're going to be promoting that through our schools and asking our principals and teachers who are available to attend. We're excited about this being a component that's not only for students but their parents, and really connecting parents to what's going on Cabrillo's campus. We'll continue to have our 7th grade trips to CSU and BNUCSC, and Cabrillo's offering scholarships. And I want to skip down to the very last item, which is a partnership with Cabrillo. We've been in conversation with their dean about the transition from high school to college, and in particular, what are the barriers that get in the way? And recognizing that once students graduate, they still, it's on them if they choose to go to a two-year school to sign up for counseling, to assess into those courses, to sign up for the courses. And Cabrillo has talked with us about the potential for bringing some of that to our campuses, so allowing students to assess into the college-level courses at the high school campus, bringing their counselors on campus to talk about those next steps. So, and in fact, I think we're moving away from a four-year plan towards more of a six-year plan, and recognizing that once they graduate, they may still need a little support with those next steps. And lastly, I want to share with you our celebrations. You've heard this before, but I'd like to keep that same good news going. The percentage of our students who are accessing the A2G curriculum who are eligible for four-year university has increased. In the last 5 years, since 2009, we've seen doubling of the Hispanic Latino students who have accessed our A2G curriculum. But it's just tremendous the work that's been done at our high schools to ensure that all students have this access. Our middle school students and our elementary school students, by the end of the year, we had 80% in middle school and 75% in elementary school who are scoring at proficient in reading. And I want to say again, this Walk to Read program, where we're not only looking at the data, but we're responding to it, I think is the model for what we want to be doing at the high school. Again, it's not just using data to label or characterize students, but using data to reflect on our practice and to better provide support. And the last item is tremendously exciting to me. 62 of our seniors earned the CLM by Literacy, which is almost double from last year. 3 students earned it in both French and Spanish, which I think is an anomaly, but very exciting. But again, this is, I think, a testament to our district's commitment to biliteracy, to supporting students, to seeing primary language not as an obstacle, but primary language as a strength. So I'm very excited to see that. And we have many, many more celebrations, but I thought we would just highlight a few from each of the grade levels.
Thank you, Angela. That was a lot of information. I'm sure we have questions. Jeremy.
Yeah. Angela, could you do me a favor and walk me through this idea of instructional focus areas through the lens, if you will, of one of our 240 Hispanic/Latino students out of 307, and I'm rounding down here, who did not meet or exceed the standard in math in 11th grade. So in short, only 20% of them did, only 37% overall. So what's going to be different next year for them, this year for them, excuse me, so that when we see these results next year, we perhaps see an increase? What classes, what...
What classes? So
in terms of the instructional focus, yes.
In terms of the instructional focus, so we've said that this is our focus and we haven't had the tools in place. We've had, we've been relying on grades. We've been relying on the assessments that teachers have related to their text and curriculum. With the SMI, we should know in the next 2 weeks which students are not at grade level. We should be able to sort that out by the specific standard. Not by the standard so much as by the subset. Our RTI coordinators can then work with the teachers to provide intervention for those students. In the middle school where they already have an intervention structure in place, the 2 middle school RTI coaches were able to adopt a curriculum that they'll be using. We are not at that place yet with high school, so we're gonna have that data in the next 2 weeks. We're gonna need to find a structure within the school day as well as work with a homework club outside of the school day. But what we have this year that we didn't have last year is a dedicated staff member who is looking at that data, who's not just leaving it up to the teacher, who's grouping those students and providing the targeted response. And I do expect to see, to be able to track student progress in an ongoing way so that we're not coming back at the end of the year and saying the same group of students who were below proficient are still below proficient.
Allison.
Thanks, Angela. I wanted to talk about the social-emotional survey for 7th to 9th graders. I think that has such potential for us to kind of identify risk factors and support students in moving from middle school into high school and to kind of look at it system-wide. And I'm wondering if there's conversation about articulating with our non-district feeder middle school so that we can get all 7th, and so that we can, because we only will have a limited picture if we're not getting our students from Shoreline and
New Brighton. Yeah,
that's a great question. Right now we are administering the survey early on in the year, so I want to say with the SRI at the high schools, they are taking the socially emotional health survey in those grades. And then in the middle school as well. So the results are very quickly available for the teams. But I think that's another layer of support with transition, so giving the assessment for the incoming students prior to coming in and thinking about what within the program we could offer. So right now where we're at is really looking at the students once they've arrived at our schools, but I think that's a great layer to add to it.
And I can imagine, I mean, one thing is that countywide, the Youth Violence Prevention Strategic Plan actually identifies it as a countywide goal to look at social and emotional well-being. So it might be a way to, I mean, I just wonder what those districts are, if they're doing something similar, if there's a way to articulate and work with them.
That would be a great follow-up with both of our feeder districts.
Okay. DB.
Thank you, Angela. There was a question that came up in our community meeting at Dela Viega around math programs at the elementary level. Several of the parents were very happy with Walk to Read, and especially the results that they've seen in their children through that program. And they were wondering if there's a walk to math or something like that.
So there was a lot of walking. March to math.
Run to math, I'm not quite sure. And whether or not the math inventory that you were speaking of at the secondary level is also being used at the elementary level. There's a similar tool that's available.
It's the same. Mm-hmm. Okay.
After third grade, Jennifer, I think we're starting with third grade. Third through algebra is how we're using the SMI. And we had looked at the possibility, we recognized that being able to tailor curriculum to groups of students, especially with that information, would be a good idea. But we also looked at how many times our students already rotate. They rotate for ELD, for Walk to Read. And in our upper grades, they have the specials. They have music, they have art, they have Life Lab and library. So it was starting to feel a bit like it was already a secondary school and an elementary. One of the goals that we have with working with a math coach is supporting the teachers with being able to provide differentiated instruction in the classroom through smaller groups. And having, for example, having 50 minutes of instructional time, breaking that up into chunks so that there's 20 minutes of whole group and then there's that opportunity to support students. What's been missing is a dedicated intervention curriculum. And so that's part of our adoption process, is not only to adopt a curriculum for students at grade level, but to be looking at what can coincide with that. We don't want to see students excluded from the grade level curriculum. What we want to do is see within a block period, teachers are teaching all students, and then they're providing more targeted support, so which allows students to move ahead and students to really work at their level.
Did I hear you correctly when you said, did you say that what you're looking to get this year is a dedicated intervention curriculum? What I'm speculating here, we had a report from summer school that an intensive block program worked well. Is that even on the are we even thinking along those lines in terms of math? Or are we looking at homework club? Are we looking at differentiated instruction within the classroom? But if we see this, for example, particularly, let's just say among our Hispanic, Latino kids, as a bit of a crisis, certainly problematic at best, might we be open to a block kind of intervention where we just do a summer school kind of a thing?
I think what's interesting is we can already look at this through Santa Cruz High, because they have been able to provide a block with year-long instruction in their math program. We use math every day. And so we've had some of these structures in place, and we haven't had the means to really measure the growth. We've only had grades. So I think this is the year to look at what that double block, how students are performing using the SMI, using the interim block assessments. So again, you know, continuing to look at the grade, but also looking at their performance on these proficiency dams. And I wouldn't say that's off the table. I think the one solution that's off the table for us as a team is that we no longer want to see students who fail Algebra 1 over and over again. We want to catch that early on. We want to look at within the first 6 weeks, who's in danger of failing Algebra 1, and what will we do about it?
Any other questions? Comments or questions from the public? Oh, I thought I was getting the question. Okay, I think we should take about a 5-minute break, and we'll be right back.
I'm going to start the alarm, though, so that we don't hit one of that. Well, I'll start the alarm.
Oh.
People wander and start talking.
I know.
5 minutes.
I know, but I think we...
What?
I'm noticing people are getting up.
Yeah, that's good. Oh.
So what do you want to meet for the coffee? What's your tomorrow schedule? Or,
could.
You know, we've got some Friday afternoon time, too.
Tomorrow morning.
Those of you looking at your cup going, I wish it was.
I filled it.
Oh, okay.
It was my 300-page board book. Is a 3-shot latte.
Oh, okay. Now we know.
Yeah, however many hundreds of pages is how many shots. That's my new.
I like that idea. Okay, so tomorrow is just a yeah, you know, 9 would be good.
That'd be great.
9, okay, good.
You want to have a Coffeetopia?
Coffeetopia is great.
I have this Sentinel endorsement at 11, but I can get ready for it.
Oh, yeah. You can have your triple latte.
I can have my triple latte. I told Claudia however many hundreds of pages in the board book is how many shots I get.
It's got a system now. It's system. Good. Do they have that?
One shot, 100 pages?
Yeah.
3 Two. Shots. You know, one shot for every
100 pages. Exactly.
Nice, clear.
I would never sleep.
Yeah, I can drink a cup of coffee and go to bed, and I can read a book for a little while. Like, I feel like, oh my God, I'm going to be up all night, and then I open my book, and in 10 minutes, I'm out.
My daughter's like, she says coffee makes me feel sleepy.
I used to be able to do that, but I hit 40, and like that. I can't have anything after 2
This is such good stuff, too.
Oh my gosh.
There's so much.
There is so much. The stuff that Angela just presented, that is the
MBC's final strategic plan.
It's just. I mean, what are doing such amazing work.
It's
really exciting.
Part of it is we've been getting those resources late. We're building it as we're doing it, which is a little anxiety producing.
Right.
Especially for these new families, new roles, because we haven't been able to design the interventions yet.
Right.
But we have the people in place to be able to look at the data, identify the kids, and start.
And you know, they will probably have, if you build it, help create it, you know. It might even be more inspiring and helpful. Can I come to one of these Illuminate trainings? I love data stuff.
Definitely.
Okay.
I actually am sending Nancy for an immunity tomorrow because I can't go.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to go learn it.
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun. You'll be blown away at what they do.
I'm going to go to the next one.
It is okay. I'm getting around on it. I just need to set my screensaver to a longer time, and I haven't figured that out.
You know what? They just said it's from me and started to make that change. Do you know how to do it?
No.
Angela can show you. She showed me. And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, because I keep having to swipe, and I'm down to 14% juice.
When you go into settings,
okay.
And then go to general. Let me see if I can recreate it.
So where am I going to find my settings? See, that's the other thing.
So just back to your desktop.
Uh-huh.
And it should make that like the subway thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then find those. It looks kind of like a little. It's great. On the bottom row, see it, the second one?
Yeah. It says extras? Oh, settings right there.
Okay, open that.
Mm-hmm.
Now see where it says general? Tap that.
Yep.
Okay. Then once you tap general, scroll down the page. And see where it says auto lock?
Yes,
now
there it is.
That.
And then go higher or lower.
Yeah, I went to 10 or 15 minutes. Yeah. And it will use a little more battery. You'll have to make sure you plug it in your charger. But I think the difference will be so nice when you're in this type of situation.
Yes.
Are you keep going off?
Well, what, yeah, and I did. I had it on 2 minutes, so I'm over here just looking like I'm massaging.
From the bottom.
We went into settings, and then we reset it.
Excellent.
Thank you.
You want my address?
Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
No,
What is the username in here for the Wi-Fi?
Teacher.
Oh, teacher.
It should stay connected.
Oh, I never had it started, I think. You know, I don't even think it came in.
I love getting mail from
The little articles. It's like it's kind of a mystery of like what in this life.
Yeah. What was this intent?
And then I'll go, oh, I know what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of something to think about. It's good to get mail. I still get excited.
I know. A letter. Okay, we've got like 4 or 5 more to go.
Okay. We do. We
got
to
put that on the
line. It's been 6 minutes. Okay, we'll get started again.
Just go for a big old cheeseburger, right?
I know.
It's got so hungry all of a sudden. I know I said cheeseburger, but
I'm never hungry. That's why I brought that. I guess because I'm not hungry, but then afterwards. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Now.
Oh my goodness.
Our next item is the superintendent's goals and action items.
Angela,
do
you have the quicker?
Every year, the Board of Trustees evaluates me using the standards laid out by CSPA and ACSA. And those standards were in your board book as a reminder. Those are the things that I'm held accountable for in my leadership and my service to the district. The other thing that we look at is we set some goals and an action plan, and the instructional focus report that you just heard is in alignment with the goals that an action plan that I've set forth for the school year personally for my work in support of us meeting our district-wide goals. So again, Angela's already reviewed these and we all know them, but they are what guide us all in our work, and they are our compass as we move forward in service of students and our staff and our community. Under goal number one, ensuring that all of our students are ready to access post-secondary college and career opportunities. Like Angela said, we're continuing our work on implementation of Common Core. I'm going to be serving as the S4C steering committee chair this year. We're really looking to set some measurable goals as a county in both college and career readiness. It's a little trickier. We're finding our measures aren't as good at supporting us in measuring career, but that's a conversation that we're having as a steering committee. The other thing that I'm excited about in the work of S4C is that we're going to be building a teacher advisory group and an operations group that represents school leadership and teachers to steer that work that's countywide. And for me as a leader, it's particularly important because we have six feeder school districts, Santa Cruz City Schools. So that articulation and that collaboration that can happen through the Santa Cruz County College Commitment Organization really is about ensuring that we're aligned with those feeder districts, that they know what we're doing and we know what they're doing, and we can work together to ensure student success and ensure that they have as many options as possible when they graduate. We're going to continue again our participation in S4C. Many of these things, like I said, Angela spoke about. We want to leverage collaborative funding opportunities, support college and career initiatives, including completing the Gates implementation grant. We received a Gates planning grant, and we have a survey that just went out to teachers this week about implementation of Common Core and what needs have been met and what needs need to be met. We're refining our articulation efforts again with our partner school districts, with Live Oak, Soquel, and the county's four small school districts. We've invited Mountain School District to participate with us in the Illuminate training. Mountain is going to be adopting Illuminate. The four smalls are hoping to over time. It's a little bit more difficult for them because their infrastructure is smaller, but we're offering our support, and we've asked the county to offer support as well, because the goal is to have all of our school districts in the county on the same systems, mm-hmm. so that it's easy for us to transfer data and to talk about student achievement. We're also working with the COE to really support a smooth transition of RFP staff to Santa Cruz City Schools over the next 3 years. I think the first round of teachers that we brought in to our own bargaining unit, I think the transition was very successful, and I want to thank RLP teachers and HR and in making that transition happen, and we're looking forward to having that program become our own district program over time. Under goal number two, we're working again to refine our framework for school culture and climate age grade span, and having those measures, having that social emotional survey tool to help us identify student needs. Refining the implementation of PBIS supports in K-5 and support implementing it in 6th through 8th grade. Using data effectively at the sites and district level to evaluate the programs we're putting in place mm-hmm. and make sure that they're making a difference, that we're investing wisely in what we're doing. We also, with LCFF dollars, with the supplemental dollars, are going to be able to support and hire two new social workers to serve in the secondary district with to support removing barriers to student engagement, in particular attendance. Yeah. Really doing intervention around kids who aren't getting to school, support identifying what the barriers are and working with them and their families. Because we know that unless kids are in the classroom, they're not going to be learning. We also want to support effective safety committees at each school with clear goals and metrics focused on school climate and providing professional development for school leaders and safety teams, which we began in August. We're also committed to closing that achievement gap, and Angela talked about this a lot as well. We're going to continue to build our secondary AVID programs, refine and monitor our academic support programs and interventions, build programs in our high schools, and build principals and assistant principals' capacity to support the principal or the professional learning community work at their sites. Continue to support the learning of all of the adults in our organization. We're also working at, and we talked about this today, building a team of RTI coordinators and instructional coaches to support our classroom teachers. We talk about differentiated instruction. It's an easy word to say, and it's very difficult to do. So we need to provide supports, we need to provide resources, we need to help build all of our toolkits so that we can continue to improve our services to students. Again, using data effectively to evaluate programs and student needs. Goal number four, we want to continue to develop a culture and climate for professionalism and teaching that makes teachers want to stay in our school district, that makes us attractive, it makes them want to stay, it, where they know they have a voice, where they know that, that their work together is the most important work that happens on behalf of students. So we want to continue to support and refine roles of skill leaders. We want to support the countywide teacher advisory for S4C. We want to support our teacher leader PLC to continue to support future leaders. You saw three teachers step up to serve as summer school principals. We want to support people who are interested in taking on different roles in leadership. Building a curriculum committee of teachers, this is one of the things that Angela wants to work on this year to guide and inform curricular decision making. Continue to support the board in refining our governance team and focused on our district goals and student outcomes. Working with the board to develop a board governance handbook with the agreements that we've made and the protocols that we have in our work together. And continue to expand and refine our recruiting efforts. We also want to provide training for bargaining unit and district negotiating team on interest-based bargaining. This is something we talked about doing last year, and we want to explore how we might do some training together to support our collaboration at the table. I think that we also want to continue. I know that there was one of the other things that I want to do, and I don't see it up there. In my PowerPoint was that we were talking with the bargaining units too about our school climate surveys, our culture and climate surveys, so that we want to talk about how we can reinstitute those, maybe tweak them, so that we can have them to inform our work at school sites. You know, what makes our school cultures work for our teachers? How are the working conditions serving our teachers? Where are the working conditions not working for our teachers? Because we want Santa Cruz City Schools to be a great place to work where everybody can collaborate on behalf of kids. There it is. Goal number five, balanced budget. We're going to continue to refine our budget process and our LCAP development process, working to get input from the community, from our stakeholders, from our teachers, from our students. I think we'll get better at it every year. We're going to start our timeline a little bit earlier this year. We're going to continue with the surveys we started last year. So we'll be asking for staff input. We'll be asking parent input from surveys in addition to our district advisory committee that is composed of all stakeholder groups. We're hoping to support passing two parcel taxes in November. And developing a comprehensive facilities master plan that includes community input. We're setting goals for increased attendance in the secondary district in collaboration with our new social workers, which in the secondary district increases our revenue. We want to continue to maintain strong communication and partnerships with our diverse community. There is always room for improvement in every area, in particular at communication, I think. We want to work to message the district vision goals and metrics with staff and the greater community, let them know what we're doing, what we're doing well, what we're learning, and what we're working on. Celebrating the successes of students and staff, we want to work on communicating to our communication to include families and communities in the work and success of the district. The district newsletter that we got out to all staff last year, we're going to make sure we get translated and out on parent listservs, in addition to our staff listservs, to celebrate the great things that are happening in our classrooms. Cabinet is committed to being visible and connected with school sites. And we want to collaborate with our community partners, the Santa Cruz Education Foundation, the Warriors, Warp to Wharf, Schools Plus, all those things that, all those organizations that are committed to working with us and supporting the success of our students and our families. Okay, that's a really quick overview of all the great work that's going to happen this year. And I'm sure it will evolve as, you know, we had plans at the beginning last year and things happen during the year that evolve to impact and change those. So we want to be flexible. It may end up looking a little bit different, but we definitely are committed to doing work that's going to move forward our district goals in different ways. So,
questions? Good work. Questions from the public or comments? Thank you, Ms. Alright. 8.3.7 unaudited actuals, Jim?
I'm going to get a clicker.
You need another clicker.
We need another clicker.
You think?
Good evening, Chairman Vestal, members of the board, and the public. Bringing forward tonight the 2014-15 unaudited actuals, a culmination of our last fiscal year, and everything that Chris just mentioned she wanted to accomplish is going to cost me more money. But this is one of our benchmarks for the year in the reporting system. And again, this year we're our beta test group for the digital schools reporting system, which is, as Chris referred to earlier, the system that is used throughout Santa Cruz County Office of Ed and the fiscal oversight. Because of the challenges that we did and the system continual conversion, the staff did just a fantastic job in deference to, you know, Jureen Lacey, Suzanne Trinchero, our payroll team, Michelle Ricks, and Alia Rodriguez that worked around the clock with all the changes in the last couple of months, to Brenda Tanner and Jennifer Robertson, doing a lot of the entry work, and our payroll people, Bernie and Molly and Electra providing support, and of course my admin, Catherine. I mean, we've just been working tremendously in the past couple of months to meet this time frame. And we can't say enough the effort that everyone did in order to make this reporting process. Again, these are unaudited actuals, as you're well aware. So it will now be subject to an external audit that will occur, and they will come to you with a presentation in December to see, really take a picture of these moments in time to report how the district has performed. So that's the early piece of it. So again, saying these are unaudited, so they still can be changed based upon preference to the auditors or what they may or may not see.
I just want to insert and thank Jim, too. This has been a really challenging close of the books. We found out last week that all of the postings that had been made in digital schools since the rollover of the budget weren't showing up as they were trying to do the final close. And it seems like every step of the way there have been huge obstacles. And I want to commend Jim and his entire team. Suzanne Trinchero worked every day of Labor Day weekend so that we could get the books closed. They've been amazingly dedicated, committed in a really difficult new system, and I just want to point that out.
Well, thank you. And it's, you know, not to sound trite, but it does take a village throughout the whole district to be successful, and they really did. So with that in mind, what are the outcomes we're looking for tonight? One, of course, is to certify with the board the 2014-15 audit actuals. We're approving the current revisions of the 2015-16 budget. Of course, our next benchmark will be the first interim, which is as of October 31st. And that's when we're really going to incorporate a lot of the changes in salary and the hirings and the change we're seeing right now, especially with benefits, with the new change in plans throughout the majority of the district. Those will be recognized in first interim and give us a better flavor of where we will if we do have potential dollars that will be able to carry forward for the remainder part of this year. And again, a key component is a multi-year projection. And it really is a projection. This information is subject to change. The next benchmark for that piece will really be in January with the governor's first revision of the budget of where it's going. We're pretty set for 15-16, but what really does it entail for us for 16-17, 17-18, based upon the current growth in the economy? The key component that the district has been used to reporting is really on the unrestricted side, because those are the dollars that we really have the ability to really earmark or present to the board for direction on from that piece. So as part of what we try to do is, one, present where we were with our estimated actuals right before the close of the year, where we ended up finishing up. And you'll see some particular variances because LCFF, which makes up the majority of the revenue piece, is where we see constant changes. That's one thing we refer to throughout the whole year. How is this calculation really going to work out as it ebbs and flows throughout this portion of it? Expenditures, there was a smaller variance as far as there was an increase and uptick. And part of our challenge to overall on expenses is now we do have to account for all the increases to the unfunded PERS and STERS liability throughout the district. That actually raised our total expenses about $1.5 million this year as part of the new reporting, what we call GASB 68 reporting mechanisms. And I covered that real briefly in the cover page of the memo. You'll see the significant changes there is we projected about a 9.93 estimated actual end up with an unrestricted reserve, and we dropped down to about 9.19, which is less than one percentage point, but I think shows 0.74 as you see. In this case, it went down a slight bit. We had some last minute negotiations that affected a lot of it throughout the whole district. We really began to spend down significant dollars across all the programs to really make an effect on the children's education. Again, this is a smaller piece, maybe a little more difficult to read, but it breaks down a lot of those variances, breaking out the revenue sources, the particular expenditure sources broken out per category, as well as the transfers in and out, and where some of the contribution variances may have occurred with some of the funding mechanisms that go on. Really, the key component now for us is our multi-year projection. And do we remain positive? Do we go qualified? In our biggest case, never wanting to go negative. The revenue, of course, is based on the local control funding formula. And that is the new mechanism that we've talked about ad nauseum over the last year and a half to 2 years from the state. The change that's occurred after 40 years of an old funding formula has been really revamped. We continue the $200 per ADA and the EPA funds, which here is the Prop 30 taxes that went into effect a couple of years ago that are set to expire in 16-17, and that's going to have a significant effect on all districts. It'll have a bigger effect on districts like ours as one of the ways that was really brought forward to really help us out of the California decline in the economy. The property tax, we've maintained a 2% increase. And this year we're looking at the numbers. Again, we don't get those numbers finalized till almost the first part of September. Those come directly from Santa Cruz County, not the opposite end of the county themselves, which provides that mechanism. And in our particular case, our elementary district is community funded or based on taxes, where our high school district is based on the revenue limit funding formula. So we project a 2% increase, which is some may think a conservative piece. But again, it'll depend how the taxes continue to come in from the county itself. And again, I remember Shonek asked at the last meeting, this is a significant reduction. This is something we have to face, this $1.5 million fair share reduction to our elementary side. I mean, we can all imagine what we could do with $1.5 million. We wouldn't be worried at barely being at 3% in 3 years. But this is something that is due from districts that are basically basic aid. And it's nothing we can do. It comes to us from the state. But we know we could probably make a better decision with it. But again, it's something we're faced to deal with and to budget for. What are some high-level expenditure assumptions? Again, we do include the step and column. We talked about the budget adoption, the 4% increase, which we'll be making adjustments to after this whole fluctuation. We'll bring that dollar amount back to you of how it affected the benefit projection at the first interim. STERS and PERS are going to be significant expenses for the district. And this is one reason that we reiterate, we will never go back and fully be funded at our 2007-08 levels, because this 25 to 30% of new revenue or given back revenue offsets this. We will never fully reach this piece, because look at those percentage rates that are set to increase for the district as a whole, as well as the commitment from the actual employees themselves at the same time, because the state cannot meet its requirements, so they're passing it down to the employers. So this will tell you out in basic long form, some ways, the MYP for the year for the next three. The key component were projected to end prior to being audited at 9.19. We knew we were going to see an increase because of the new dollars in 15-16, which are really going to carry us for these huge increases in expenses along the way. Of course, this is just projection, sans continued negotiation with all the groups. Changes we'll make continually with salary, changes we'll make with any PERS adjustments that we have to do, STIRS adjustments, as well as right now, this does not include the new categorical program of effectiveness, educator effectiveness training. We're still trying to get that all that information from the state of what the actual funding amount will be, because they've changed that a couple of times. We know it'll go directly for professional development of our educators. Come with a plan before you, but that's not incorporated yet. So as these changes arise, our commitment is to bring those changes to you at budget updates throughout the year. A key component you can see is our unrestricted reserve, which gives you that percentage of where we were for the past decade and where we project ourselves to be over the next two. So as you can see, we're not challenged with having to quote-unquote reveal all these funds where we're trying to place the money, because we'll just barely be at 3% right now in year three based upon the current economic model. And we do use conservative projections on income. I mean, we just can't recognize there's a difference right now between school services and the Department of Finance. Will it land in between those two in the out years? Potentially. As those changes are made known to us, we'll then incorporate those into our plans. So what are our key budget milestones? Of course, tonight we're going to ask you to certify the unaudited actuals. In December 2015, we'll present the first interim report, but of course our change and our challenges will be to bring you updates at the meeting as they arise. So we don't want to make it, just three or four time reporting, but to keep you and the public informed. The governor's proposals will come on January 16th. Second interim, then of course the big May revise, which really gives us the nuts and bolts and really presents the challenge. I know we've been asked in the last couple of years, why can't we start earlier? Well, May is when we get the actual nuts and bolts of the whole budget. And so we're trying to really spend this time to put everything into place. And we'll come back for the June adoption, of course, in coordination and conjunction with our local control accountability plan, which happens prior to those hearings. So tonight we're bringing forward to you the recommendation for board action to certify the unaudited actuals. And of course, my little tidbit at the end, which I thought was really, because we continue to learn, and as we continue to learn, it's going to increase our leadership. And I found this quote from John F. Kennedy, leadership and learning are indispensable to each other. I really go hand in hand. With that, I'll open up to questions.
Are there questions?
Just a quick one. And it's just going back to the basic aid formula. I mean, when I see the offset of the $1.5 million going out and not understanding the difference between the ADA to what basic aid brings, are we in a better position in basic aid? I don't think so. I'm not crunching the actual numbers, or maybe somewhat neutral to what it would be.
Yeah, I'm sorry, before I was my train of thought on that. Is during the height of the California recession, when the secondary district was basically funded 78 cents on the dollar, the basic aid portion, which you cut the two together, make up Santa Cruz City Schools. They probably worked hand in hand to create the level of funds that we had at the time. So we have to go back and do a specific analysis, see, which one helped out more. But basically, we're one district. We use that piece together. Are we better off or... the one thing I look at it is, as a district, based upon all the challenges, the district remains strong based upon this partnership between elementary and secondary and Mid-Hope City Schools.
So I'm going to add to that, Jim, if I can. We'll fall out of basic aid when ADA becomes higher than the tax-based revenue. And the county has made some projections that we might fall out of basic aid in the elementary district. It's just not clear if and when, and there's so many variables and factors, it would be difficult for us to make the prediction. But we're still bringing in more revenue from our tax base than we would from ADA. It's not as big a difference as some other basic aid districts that have a higher local taxes.
My question was, is it an option to opt out? I mean, it's obviously driven by the tax revenue and a formula.
Right.
We don't get to arbitrarily decide as a district where we want to land.
Right. We're hearing more from being a community-based district, a basic aid district.
Thought being, and I have no idea, and it would be when you do the comprehensive to see what our community has, but if we were not basic aid, we could have students opting into our district and bringing the dollars that way and maybe having different sites, you know, for numbers to grow, but that's just way out there in left field. Just a thought. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Any other questions? Questions from the public?
The first one, which I'd like to point out, is if you go back to that slide 0607, and you can see there that in 0607, you would have got a report from the previous CBO that would have told you that in 09, 010, you would be down. You'd probably be below 3%. And so the history shows that we never fall. And so when we get to 17, 18, one only has to remember that in 9-10, in 06, 07, you were told in 9-10 you would be where you're going to be in 17, 18. I'm always confused, but yet here's the actual, this is the first time I've seen it. And you're never anywhere near 3%. And on that note, my question would be, what would it cost for 13, 14 to give the classified group a 3% raise? What would be the cost, and how would that impact this unrestricted reserve? I'm not as quick on the math as you can.
I don't know, about 13, 14? Or are you thinking about 14, 15? 14, 15,
yeah.
14, 15?
And we see what we got in 14, 15. What would that cost us?
It'd probably be 3 years out, taking us down below 2%.
I see. But what would it cost us in 14, 15 if we gave us a 3% raise?
Well, 1% of classified is a little over $100,000, or over $300,000.
Okay. And then the final question is, you know, I hear this all the time, this debate about if we fall out of basic aid. Other districts that would be similar to us in the size and the nature, and the same demography, has any other district fell out of basic aid, and what has been the results of that?
Oh, they've gone back and forth, and they end up losing money. In that process, depending upon it, some have actually changed on an annual basis, and then it really becomes a game—not a game, but how do you really try to present that as you calculate and project out the future if you're changing 1 year to the next? So I've seen that particularly with a former district that was located about 600 feet from my previous employer. They were in 1 year and not the next, and they still, when they fell out, they had to still make the payback of the basic aid.
Oh, the fair share reduction?
Fair share reduction.
Whoa.
Yeah, so those are my questions. So part of the, I wasn't here, and I wouldn't pretend to be. I know that probably during the time, you know, as the district began to feel the effects of decreased enrollment, funding from the state, there was tough decisions made by bargaining units, tough decisions made by the board, which enhanced and allowed the district not to reach that level. So there was a lot of proactivity that occurred so that wouldn't occur, because that would just be detrimental to not just the employees, but also to the students. So in this particular case, what we show you is for 14-15, we projected a 9.74 reserve, and we're at 9.19, or a little under, so we're less than 1 percentage point off from what we were estimating all year long. So that would be one of my goals that I committed, is as these changes occur, we update the information to see where we will be. And again, when the state makes the revenue changes 30 days before the end of the fiscal year, it will definitely be out of our control. That was not hinted at all in January, February, March, April, until we got the news in May.
I just appreciate this scale here.
Yes, sir.
It shows that, because I was here in 06-07, and I heard the same doom and gloom predictions that in 09 or 10 we would be below the reserve. Yet it shows clearly that we were anywhere near coming there, so I'm a little leery at 17-18 showing 3.12, given the history that I've seen in the district in the last 20 years. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Okay.
Comments?
My union. Yeah. I just wanted to mention, in case you didn't know, that a coalition of ed groups has filed to restore, renew Prop 30, but under the title the School Funding and Budget Stability Act. And it would boost income tax rates on couples earning more than $500,000 a year, but it would let the sales tax expire. So get ready for a campaign.
Yeah.
I had one.
Thank you, Casey.
Thank you, Casey.
Today.
I've never left them.
Okay, this is an action item. Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
Patty moves.
Second.
And Allison second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 5-0.
Thank you. Thank you to all since I've been here for the partnership.
Yeah. Our next item is resolution 10-15-16.
Yes, this is done in conjunction with non-tenant actuals, and this was a change. I think in the past it was may have been approved via the consent agenda, but the GAN follows the non-tenant actuals to show that based upon the whole GAN initiative going back many years, that we are expending the same amount or increasing what's going to be committed to education. This information is pulled directly from the state accounting computer system that puts it all together, but we do meet the commitment of making that and reaching our GAN resolution for comparing the 14-15 audit actuals to our 15-16 projections. So staff recommends approval by the board for the GAN resolution.
Any questions from the public?
I have approval.
Okay, Patty moves approval. Second?
Second.
And Allison seconds. It's a resolution, so roll call, B.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Next item is approval of personnel commissioner, James Spano.
It started acting up today. I can't see it at all. Do you have something to pull up for this?
I don't.
Okay. So I bring to you, as the second part of the personnel commission approval process, of Mr. James Spano as the board-appointed member of the personnel commission. We had a hearing last time, or pre-hearing, and now this is the approval process for the appointment of Mr. Spano on behalf of the board. He has been serving now for a couple of months and is willing to continue and go forward representing. So my recommendation is approval of Mr. James Spano.
Are there questions? Questions, comments from the public? Motion?
Move approval.
Patty moves and Jeremy seconds. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 5-0. Okay, we have item 8.3.10, sunshine items, negotiations.
So I bring forth tonight the recommendation to approve the Santa Cruz City School District, our contract proposals to the Santa Cruz Council of Classified Employees for the 15-16 year as our sunshine and items.
Any questions? Comments or questions from the public? Action item, motion?
I'll move approval.
Patty moves approval.
Second.
Allison second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 5-0. And that concludes our meeting. We adjourn, and our next meeting is, well, next Wednesday.
I think we should.
But I think
they'll go out tomorrow or by Friday.
Yeah.
So why don't I take it home?
Advisory issue for Southern and Central California.
And
I just got like a weather alert.
And then I can read them,
yeah.
Or I can just read them myself on Friday.
Okay, the ones that are already done that I've already pulled out. But what I need to do is the staff we have right now to make sure there's no issue. Because there was some kind of glitch in whatever was going on. But there would be differences of the same people.
Okay.
Some of it might have been because there was like a spelling misnomer or something. But I think I got all of them on the list where there was some just the quick look over. We can switch it to the ones that I have all the time. But you want to sign off on. I think I closed most of those. But
oh, we don't want
to. Yeah, well, yeah. So. But not all of them are. Most of them are envelopes because I ran out of pages to stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't know because I thought, well, if you I don't know if you have a number match or not,
right.
Or if it was just what happened
yeah,
that day. Okay. Yeah. Because it was like 450.
So what do you want to do?
So just take the ones you have, and I'll give you the ones I have. Minus, and you take a look to see if there's anyone you know or anything that you
that'll be that are open.
Yeah, they're open.
Okay.
And then you can sign
and then
them.
Stuff's the ones that aren't. Don't have a letter in it?
Mm-hmm. And sign them if you know them. You know,
okay,
so, so that way, and if there was anybody you kind of know off your head, but
okay.
You know, or if anyone you know, you know.
One of our auditor partners paid for that for the
stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Take yes.
Great.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
So I'm going to take yours. You're going to take mine.
Yes, most of it because yes, just
yeah. I have letters.
No, no, that's fine. That's perfect. I can just take that part home and just continue what I'm doing.
And I'll go through all the stuff that are there. I'll write them down. I'll seal them up.
Okay, so I'm
going to
get the nail.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, we'll get there. Oh, we're getting it.
They're both. Yeah.
Oh.
They're just a little bit better.
And I have like one Claudia and a French.
I make a mess.
I want to give you the envelopes I pulled for the people that you were going to contact off the mailing list. Not that we have,
I thought we were mailing them, and then I was going to do a follow-up call.
Okay, if you want to do it that way, perfect. I'll just put them all, stuff them, and go. You don't want to put a little side note on them. It's totally up to you. There's only about 10 for you. But that's however you want it, whatever's easiest for you. So if I can stuff them because I have to go.
You stuff them and then send me, do you mind sending me an email that says, Chris, these are yours, so I don't forget?
Oh, do you want me to just put them in the box?
Okay. Yeah,
that would
be helpful.
Yeah, I mean,
it's helpful.
Yeah.
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 Do you teach tomorrow?
I don't know.
Ah, wow.
And so he's gonna. He's
and are you gonna be
sales.
Like?
Oh yeah.
When I get home,
that over her.
Takes me like
in a write
check. Okay. Good.
Bye, Didi.
I'll have a focus room.
I have that when you made those
lists.
Conversation with them. Yeah. Have it before it actually hits their mailbox, though, so that they don't
yeah.
Want to.
Thank you for these cups.
Yeah, these are nice.
Those are from our, that was from our architect. We asked, we wanted to do that kickoff at the golf course, and they came out in for lunch, which was really nice.
Oh, but then I'll take it to guys tomorrow. Maybe they can sell it to you. Yeah. So what do you think about
that? No. I was going to
get a ticket.
No.
And
they go.
So we're
talking about
it's worrisome. And then I was going to look at some of them like Stu and those guys. They were good. But, you know, they're all busy on these nights because they're always getting done.
We will do it.
Yeah, I know. It's not good, though, because the bigger campuses are coming in, and those are coming in. So, you know, it's happening. I know. I want to
you know, and it was in 4 years old. But you know, she didn't have to review it.
It's amazing.
I'll call you back for it.
Yeah. Tomorrow is Friday.